You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street, horror for the casually obsessed. I'm Kim.
I'm John.
And this week, we are talking about some undead boys who make some noise with The Crow from 1994?
94, yep. I think it goes without saying that Kim and I usually pick the movies that we talk about on the podcast. This double feature, both parts of this double feature, are actually handpicked by the members of the Nightmare on Film Street Fiend Club. In the Discord, we have a separate channel for the Fiend Club members, the Patreon supporters, and we opened up a channel for them to suggest movies and double features that they'd like us to talk about on the podcast. And we thought we'd kick off the new year by picking up on one of the double features that they'd recommended. I'm not going to give away the second movie that we're talking about, but this week we are talking about The Crow.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd ever considered Crow a Nightmare on Film Street movie, but watching it, yeah, definitely spooky.
Wow. So I'm not going to lie. Since we talked about doing this episode, I have been very interested to hear what you think about this movie, because you revealed to me recently that you just kind of don't fuck with 90s indie grunge, basically all the cool movies of the 90s. You're just like, meh.
Yeah, and to be fair, and it's weird because you'd think that, you know, me being a goth,
yeah,
that this would be my bread and butter, but it was a little early for me. 1994, I was only 5. I was not a goth yet.
You didn't just come into this world with black eyeliner and like platform boots.
I wish. But no, yeah, so this one was never really part of the chainmail that made up my goth armor.
Wow.
It's weird too, because like Queen of the Damned, arguably a terrible film, is very The Crow.
Yeah. They would have made a great double bill.
And I think it's phenomenal.
Okay.
Yeah, I just never got into The Crow. I tried watching it, I'm going to say in grade 8, so I was like 12, and I just didn't get it. I don't think
grade 8, it should have hit.
Yeah, I don't think I finished it. It was just like, ew, this is crime superhero. I just didn't vibe with the superhero-iness of it.
Okay. Well, you know, now that you say that, maybe it makes a little more sense because, you know, as a boy, I guess the crime superhero-iness of it, you know, appealed to me. But, you know, like it or not, this movie's in my bones. Like,
I could hear that while we were watching. I could tell.
Like, if this movie came out now and I was an adult experiencing it for the first time, I don't think that I would be like, oh yeah, hell yeah, this is gonna be one of the 10 movies that shaped my fucking life. But yeah, I've easily seen this movie 20 times, maybe more. I've seen The Crow a lot.
This is probably my second full watch.
That's fucking crazy to me. That's fucking insane. And I get it, though. Now that I am aware of how much you hate movies like The Crow, it's like every movie in the 90s that wasn't Pulp Fiction, you're like, fuck it.
Even Pulp Fiction, John.
Wow! I'm just learning now! I thought you liked it! You were just being polite to me! Fuck.
No, I'm sure Pulp Fiction is fine. I just don't remember
it. Wow. I'm sure Pulp Fiction is fine. I've just always pretended to watch it. Much like the times that I've made you watch The Crow. I've made you watch this movie before.
That's why I said full watch.
Yeah, that's okay.
Second full watch.
Well, I think it would be fun. As somebody who's only now really taking the movie, and to make you give us three good things, I'll jump in and do one for you, but I want at least two of those three good things from you. Why should people check out The Crow?
Okay. Number one, maximum crowage. There's
maximum crowage.
There's a crow. He is definitely the star.
And, you know, get a full Edgar Allan Poe sort of
retelling,
yeah,
you get some,
right?
You get some Poe quotes as well.
Yeah, you're just like, it's a raven, but, you know, fuck it. Basically the same bird.
Point two, Brandon Lee. Obviously, he's fantastic in this, and definitely, it's such a weird thing. Like, we're obviously going to talk about it a little bit because, I mean, it's in the DNA of this movie that he passed away during filming. And it's just one of those weirdly poetic things that's, like, stranger than fiction. Obviously, he's the son of Bruce Lee, who died young also, and before his breakout role, and Brandon Lee died before his breakout role, and in a movie about somebody who comes back from the death for... It's a lot. But regardless of all of that, like, even if you don't want to watch it for that, like, sick, twisted, real-life backstory and you want to just watch the film, it's an insanely great performance. It's going to be interesting to see how the remake plays out.
Let's pretend the remake's not happening. Let's just talk about 1994's The Crow.
But yeah, it's a really great performance. And one that I would normally not get behind because it's a very superhero-y, anti-hero, villain hero that is just a whole lot of one-liners.
There's a lot of one-liners in the movie. Okay, so good thing number one is Crow. Good thing number two is the guy who plays the Crow. And I'm just going to go ahead and say number three. Dang, that's tough. I mean, I just love the idea of a vigilante who's come back from the dead. Fucking dude crawls out of his own grave and avenges his own death and his fiance's death, and it's set all on Devil's Night in Detroit.
Yeah, I want to bring it back to superhero-y stuff because I'm normally not into that, but you know how I always say that Batman is the most emo superhero?
Totally.
And he, like, I'm the hero that Gotham needs, la la la. The Crow is the hero that Gotham needs. He is a justified emo superhero. He is a justified level of emo.
Well, yeah, he definitely has earned it. And I'll say this right now, that originally the title for this double feature was Emo Boys Make Some Noise, but I think based on what part two is going to be, it didn't quite apply, so we're going strictly with Dead Boys Make Some Noise. And we're going to get into full spoiler territory. Spoiler, why am I saying? This fucking movie's like 30 years old. We're going to get into all the juicy details of The Crow right after the trailer.
People once believed that when someone dies, a crow carries their soul to the land of the dead. But sometimes, just sometimes, Crow could bring that soul back to put the wrong things right.
You're all going to die.
Is that gasoline I smell?
Victims, aren't we all?
The Crow is currently sitting at a 7.5 out of 10 on IMDb, which is a pretty good rating for IMDb, 84% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 3.7 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
I mean, it does go with saying, though, it probably the ratings of this film are very skewed based on its release.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of those things. I mean, a large part of the conversation was about how great Brandon Lee was and how much of a star in the making he was.
Well, yeah, and you're rating him in a way. Like, this tragedy became this film. And so, like, in any way to rate it, it's the same sense as, like, how Dark Knight was when Heath Ledger died. Like, the movie became a legacy.
Yeah, it's like getting a posthumous Oscar or something.
Like, an instant legacy.
Yeah. The good news there, though, is that both those movies, Dark Knight and The Crow, are dope.
And they're phenomenal performances. So, like, the accolades are deserved, but it is hard to, like, talk about this movie and be like, eh! The performance, fan-fucking-tastic, but as for a, you know, tragic villain anti... Or what are we going to call him? An anti-hero? Yeah, anti-hero.
Sure.
It doesn't have a whole lot of meat on its bones. And maybe that comes down to the fact that, unfortunately, Brandon Lee died before they had completed filming of basically the inciting incident where... Mm-hmm. bad guys break into their really cool gothic like tower apartment.
Right. Are you really like a goth musician if you don't have a circular window that overlooks the city?
So good. Such a good window to jump out of. And they rape his fiance. They're getting married tomorrow. Tomorrow's Halloween, by the way. Who gets married on Halloween?
Oh man, that is such a good fucking line where like one of the beat cops is like, who the fuck gets married on Halloween anyway? And Ernie Hudson, standing over a girl who's dying, takes a long drag on his cigarette and goes, nobody. Fuck, that's dark.
Yeah, because she's not getting... anyway, but in that whole opening sequence, we don't see Eric Draven at all.
Yeah.
And I mean, you understand why, but they didn't have a lot of material to flesh that out. And I think the opening, because it wasn't allowed to be as, like, I guess, jarring and upsetting and physical for the audience, you see a little bit in flashbacks and stuff, but he's really absent from those scenes, and you do really feel it.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Because even watching it now, I've seen the movie 100 times. I know the beats. I know what's happening. I know the story really well. But it feels like you're missing something. And, you know, they did. It would have been a complete disservice to not release the movie. Let's just say that, right? Like, everybody that worked on it, especially Brandon Lee, like, it would have been awful if they just fucking scrapped it and it was a movie that you heard and people talked about but never got finished and never got released.
It's one of those weird things where you really don't know what the right thing to do is.
Yeah.
Because you want to honor the person and the work that they've done, but also the subject matter of the film is so strangely close in theme to what really happened.
Well, I mean, hey, it's a movie about a guy who's undead, who can literally like jump off buildings and get shot and not die. And, you know, for a real life person who died filming the movie, getting accidentally shot with a prop gun. Yeah, it might be a little, it is a little weird a few times in the movie when he gets shot
he gets
and stands
shot
back up and laughs.
So much
but,
in the movie.
Yeah, but I mean, so many people get shot in action.
No,
movies,
I know.
And,
I mean, it is a really fun, it's not a fun movie. It's not fun at all. But
and for an emo movie, it's totally fun.
Yeah, no, it is. And I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, the whole opening the movie is a little weird because it's not how it was supposed to be.
Well, they and you don't want to criticize the movie and be like, oh, your opening wasn't
Can
enough
you imagine?
To make me like the movie. Like, I can't remember what the original studio was, but after Brandon died, they were not going to release the film.
Yeah.
And somebody else bought it, and they pumped another $8 million into production to get it done. And that's where they did some rewrites and did some extra shoots. Luckily enough, The Crow has wet hair in front of his face a lot of times, so it doesn't look too stunt double-y.
Yeah.
I mean, and you can kind of tell when they're going to be using a stunt double, but they did a good job finishing the film.
Oh yeah, absolutely, they did a great job. I mean, it helps too that it's super dark, saturated in shadows and stuff. Like, it's, you're totally fine to hide your actor's face for a bunch of
yeah.
it. And it's all before he gets the paint, like the makeup. It's kind of like a music video for the first 15 minutes of the movie.
The whole movie is like a music video.
Yeah, but don't you love that about it? Don't you love that it's like a fucking 90s goth music video? No? Okay, that's fine. That's fine. That's just a me thing, I guess. Okay, cool. But it totally works if you're trying to sort of, you know, blow past a bunch of info that you're not able to sort of deliver because you don't have your lead.
Yeah. And because we're kind of missing that connection of his death a little bit, it's very fortunate. And this is the weirdest thing I'm ever going to say on this podcast, because it's, oh, is this a sentence I want to put out? The fact that the bad guys are very bad, and we have flashbacks of the very bad things they do. They rape Shelley, mm-hmm. his fiance, and they're really disgusting and POV when they do that, and they flashback for each of the characters. So you do get some animosity when the Crow is hunting down each of them individually, versus like, he's not doing it for his own death at that point. So we don't really need to see him up close and personal falling out the window. It's really what they do to Shelley.
Yeah, he's not avenging himself. He's avenging his fiance.
Yeah, and those rape scenes are very upsetting. So they help fill in our lack of an opening, if that makes sense. Like, when he starts hunting down the villains, I'm like, wait, what? When did he die? Oh, I guess I saw his tombstone, so I guess he died.
okay.
But then, yeah, you see the rape flashbacks, and you're like, get him!
Now look, I know this movie's a bummer. Everybody who sits down to watch this movie who's heard anything about it knows it's a fucking bummer. But here's the deal, man. It is so fucking cool sometimes. When he comes out of the grave and we've got a POV shot from inside the casket lifting the lid and moving a bunch of dirt around, isn't that amazing? Don't you love that?
Yeah. It's also just
there
like,
are so many buts in your yes when we talk about a movie like The Crow. Yeah, but
no, it's just also really wet the whole time.
God damn it.
So yeah, like it's really cool and he crawls out of the grave, but he's like, it's all wet and dirty.
Yeah, he didn't like it either. That's why he threw his clothes away and the crow is like, hey man, some boots. Like that. I love that the crow helps him find an outfit.
Why did the crow bring him back though, just for vengeance? Like if the crow had the ability, why didn't the crow bring back Shelly and they could have like a dinner date and then go back down where they're from?
I think it's because Shelly had time to accept her death, maybe? I don't know. Maybe it's just because he died with anger or something?
Yeah,
because
I think in the opening voiceover, they're talking about the legend of the crow and how it carries people to the underworld, and I think he just, like, refused to go or
something. Yeah, the crow is totally like, you got a rough deal. We're going to bring you back. I got a lot on my plate right
we
now.
We
got
to go to the underworld, but you can have a couple nights.
Yeah. You know what? Perfect time. Next year, I'm going to pencil you in. I won't forget about it, and it'd be great. It'd be like the 1 year anniversary. Everybody's like remembering how awful this was, and you could show up and like pow pow, save the day, take over Devil's Night. That's the other thing, that this movie is set on Devil's Night, which is kind of a thing that doesn't really exist anymore, or at least Detroit wants to pretend doesn't exist
anymore.
I was
gonna say about this is the setting of this is not a real location. It's a city of all back alleys. The whole thing is back alleys.
Yeah, I often wonder if it's movies like The Crow that sort of like helped me fall in love with all of those like really shitty New York movies. Like, oh wow, this place is just, it's a city of back alleys and they're all gross looking. Because that's exactly what this movie
is. It feels like a fake universe. Like they run down one street and it just like, you know, like the edges of Pac-Man just sent them back to the other side. Like,
there's only
6 streets where these, like, this evil villain overlord with his cronies are hanging out, and then the crow pops up, and, like, of course he's gonna find them all in one night.
Yeah, they all exist in the tiny little snow globe that an evil dude is holding, yeah.
Exactly, and there is a snow globe.
That's why I brought it up. Yeah,
it's Krampus. We're watching Krampus.
Fuck yeah, we are, baby. Devil's Night Krampus. I like it. It's funny, too, because, like, it is really stylized, and we have plenty of scenes where the crow is just, like, flying up above the city, and we get an idea of like the city streets and
you
the
get
landscape.
Crow POV.
We get a lot of crow POV, and it's great. But yeah, the place, it looks like a really contained universe. But the funniest part is that it's set in modern Detroit. They weren't like, oh, we're taking it back to when Detroit was dangerous. Like, we're in Detroit now. This is what Detroit looks like in 94.
I didn't even know it was set in Detroit. I literally thought it was a fictional place.
Devil's Night was a thing that used to be a huge problem in bad areas of Detroit because of so much, you know, abandoned buildings and whatnot. People would genuinely set the city on fire.
Oh, wow. Like, yeah. It literally was a fire
it
thing.
It was a thing. It was a whole thing. And isn't anymore, thankfully, I think. I mean, some people try and bring it back, but I think they pretty much did.
Ernie Hudson, he...
Right? You just gotta send in the Ghostbuster.
Got control over that city.
You loved him in his little, like, a cop apartment where he's just, like, in his boxers and a
with
white...
his hat. It was the best.
He's
also
got
just
his little cop belly.
Seeing the crow being, like, a nice human being even though he's undead. Like, it's just like having Edward Scissorhands in your apartment, you know, like when he's sitting on the waterbed.
Okay.
When he gets Ernie a beer and, like...
Yeah, he hands him a beer. Like, here, you're gonna have a hard time accepting this, but I am real.
Yeah, it was just sweet.
I think the cast of characters in this movie should have been one of our good things at the top of the episode, but like, holy shit, are the characters amazing, and also the cast is incredible in this movie. So many fucking people in this movie that just pop up in like all of your favorite movies. You're giving me that nod like you need me to. Okay, cool. One of them is obviously Ernie Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, everybody's
Tony
favorite
Todd
Ghostbuster.
In a turtleneck.
Tony Todd in a fucking turtleneck with these cool wire rim glasses.
Yeah, and he's got like this little bleach spot in his hair. It looks great.
He looks like he could be a musician, but has instead decided to be a crony for Michael Wincott.
He is much higher than a crony.
Okay, he's the right hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, my
He's
mistake.
A side boss.
Okay. The rest of the cast are the cronies.
Yeah.
The idiots that get sent off to do shots and swallow bullets whole because to prove they're tough. But yeah, Tony Todd, pretty fucking killer. His boss, Michael Wincott, Mr. Gravelly Voice himself, who
Mr.
we all...
Mr. Bad Hair Extensions.
Yeah. The voice helps forgive the hair extensions. Also, I don't have extension dar. I can't tell. You bring it up all the time, you're like, wow, this person's got bad extensions. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You mean to tell me he didn't grow his hair out? Looks amazing. I thought it looked real.
Okay.
As a child. as an adult, I'm aware that people do not do that. Like, he would have had to prep for 30 years for this role in order to have that hair. Then you got David Patrick Kelly, like, from the Warriors. Like, he's still in gangs 30 years later, right? Fucking everybody's favorite stoner from Twin Peaks The Return. I'm the only person who gives a shit about Michael Massey. Do you remember him? He's the
none of the bad guys were familiar to me.
None of them.
No.
None of them. Not even Tintin?
Not a one.
Oh, man,
they all looked the same.
Completely lost his fucking name. He's Nikon from Hackers.
Oh.
Okay, you're right. Another cool grunge movie from the 90s that you don't care
no,
about.
No, I fucking love Hackers.
Okay, so you like Hackers.
Okay, but... so it's a Venn diagram, so I don't like any of them except for the ones that have Matthew Lillard in them.
Okay, no, you know what? That's making a lot of sense. That checks out. You've really shown your math on this. Okay, well, I love the cast of this movie. No one gives a shit about the guy who plays Fun Boy, but for me, I always remember him as that guy from Seven who's running the strip club at the end of the movie. He's like, hey, did anybody come into this place with something under their arm? He's like, everybody coming in here has got something under their arm. You don't remember? Man, these are all, like, faces that I could pull out of a crowd.
Yeah, but this is your era.
Yeah, man. The 90s, the best decade ever invented.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The one thing that struck me as odd, just speaking of the 90s, was at those weird concerts they were at, there were ashtrays on the stage for the people in the front row.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was like, ashtray, weird.
I thought you were going to say for the musicians. I was like, that's not really a huge deal. Like,
no,
okay, yeah.
But imagine like being a musician and there's ashtrays for the fans on the stage. Like,
who's respecting that rule?
I just think that's weird.
It's like, well, I guess legal to smoke in buildings back then, but like, who's like taking the time while getting crushed up against the stage to be like, ashtray here. I would hate for somebody to have to clean this up later.
Yeah, like at an industrial show, or like better not get ashes anywhere.
Oh, man. I love a bad guy whose headquarters are above a music venue. Boom. I believe it. I don't know why. Who fucking, like, yeah, of course he's upstairs murdering people with his sister, who he's also having sex with, and
yeah,
is obsessed
with
occult magic.
Dracula table? You're like, is this your office or your house?
The greatest thing is that they're at that Dracula table, and he's like, everybody's here. They're waiting for you. And it's like, this isn't the meeting chambers? Like, you've got a different, bigger, longer table for hanging out with all the bad guys you know?
No, I think it was that table.
Okay.
Maybe, I don't know, man.
There's just like, they're in the waiting room. Like, okay, let me go say hi. You guys redeck, put the guns out. Everybody, I need a gun at every place setting.
The girlfriend's like, your friends are here. I guess I should get off the table.
Oh, man. She's great. Half her lines in this movie are like, I like the pretty eyes. Like, and then, I don't know if you remember, all of the bad guys are lined up at the table, like, loading guns, smoking cigarettes, like, oh, it's gonna be so great, we're gonna burn the city down tonight. And she, unprovoked, says, I like the pretty eyes. And everybody looks at her like, what the fuck did you just say?
I thought she said, I like the pretty lights there.
Oh, you
like,
think so?
Because that's, they're lighting the town on fire.
Okay, well.
I thought she switched it up for relevance.
That's pretty funny. I like that. She's like, I'm not just a one-note girl. I also like lights. But the best part is that we do have a reaction shot of her going like, oh, like nobody liked what I had to say.
Also, when the crow was like killing everyone, there was a reaction shot of her and she looked very like, that's gross. Like, ew, gross. Yeah, everyone's dying around me.
I'm going to go back to burning eyeballs for black magic and snorting a giant pile of cocaine, I guess.
She did look straight out of a Twin Peaksy universe, though. She fit in real good.
Pretty great. Pretty great. What do you think of the revenge sequences? Okay. All right. That's cool. I mean, what is it that you're like about? Because if it's the dialogue, I'm with you. Dialogue's a little theatrical.
Yeah,
and, like,
no,
I wonder if that's a choice because he's in his like clown getup.
I do like it though.
Okay.
Because he says some like poey things, and he's just like, and then
it's a little it's a little over the top.
And also, he's super dreamy. So like any close up, you're just like, yeah. You did some revenge, whatever.
Which one's your favorite revenge?
Oh, I don't know. The first two were like kind of the same. One gets a bunch of knives in them, the other gets a bunch of needles in them.
Yeah. I love that when the bad guy comes in, he goes, they stab Tintin and each of his major organs alphabetically. Like, how the fuck do you know that?
I think he was just being dramatic.
I think it was just really cool.
He was just adding a little flair.
Yeah, he was like, this is how I'm going to make it like a nice spin. This is how everybody knows me. I describe murder as real cool.
I did like the thrift shop when he filled the gun full of wedding
full
rings.
Full of wedding rings. Yeah. Love that.
I mean, that guy didn't die there, but he got burnt.
He died eventually. It's totally fine. I love that when he gets stabbed in the neck, the bad guy's like, will you just die already? Give me your gun, and blows him away. That scene's great. I love the pawn shop sequence because, like, you know that this guy's a piece of shit anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we see that he's buying, you know,
stuff with
jewelry,
blood on them.
Stuff with blood on it.
Like, he really is turning a blind eye onto the stuff he is collecting.
He's your stereotypical shitty, you know, slum pawn shop owner, but he's got a box of rings, and the crow is just fucking going through them, and this is the best part of the movie. I love this is super emo, but he's got his eyes closed and he's just feeling each of the rings, and he's like, no, this one's not right, this one's not, oh, this is the one that breaks my heart, that's how I know it's the right ring. But don't you get the sense that he is maybe also seeing every single life that has been ruined by each of those rings?
If that was the case, then they would definitely be franchising the story a bit more. Because as soon as he's done killing the baddies that hurt him personally, he's like, well, back to me grave. 'Twas a nice night.
Grave. Okay, do you not know?
Yeah, I know that there's a bunch of sequels and shit.
And a TV show.
That's good for this show.
Okay, well, some of the sequels aren't bad. City of Angels, pretty okay.
Yeah, well, cool.
Yeah, but yeah, he loads all those fucking, he loads all those
that's
those
a nice little,
a
like,
shotgun. It's
mini
great.
Revenge. You know, like, just shooting the rings and they're what ignites the...
Yeah, well, it's like you're buying jewelry from people who are killing other people to get it. It's just like, you're not helping the situation. You're providing an opportunity for them to make a living off of killing people like me and my fiance.
Well, not just that, but in a lot of those circumstances, like, even just people who are down on their luck who are pawning in, like, their wedding bands and stuff. Like, you just think of tragedy anytime you see a collection of wedding bands at a thrift store. I just feel soft on the plot. I'm just soft on the whole plot.
Okay.
But visually, loved the film.
Right? Doesn't it look so cool?
And it's super goth, so I'm totally down. In the first murder, with the knives guy, when he jumps off the building and, like, discovers he can just, like, land on the ground, and he laughs.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I love that
full
shot.
Standing ovation for that.
It's
that
pretty
was
wonderful.
Lovely.
Yep. Love that. Yeah. That's genius. The whole movie has got, like a Batman-y quality to it.
It is very Batman. Justified level of emo.
Well, I'm talking like there's a lot of matte shots and like double exposure and stuff, especially because I don't think they wanted to try and get the actual crow, like the bird, the crow, to interact with scenes and actors. So you can tell that they shot the crow separately and then like subbed it in or put it in with digital editing, because this is like an early example of CGI.
Mm-hmm.
And it all looks great. Like, that's the thing. Like, it's really early with the technology, and I think they did an awesome job. Because it doesn't feel like bad CGI. It feels like a stylized choice.
I also think how dark the film really lends
that probably helps.
To all of the blending.
Yeah. But it does really look... Now, I have not read the comic book. I'm not, like, a diehard fan of it or anything. But it does kind of feel like the comic book came to life, in a sense. And I think that's just how they stylized it, and it worked really well. It definitely hides some seams for digital trickery that they were doing at a time when that was super dangerous to do, because this is only like a few years before The Frighteners, and even The Frighteners looks a little dated, I guess.
Yeah, but in the best ways.
Yeah, I know. I'm constantly defending it. I think it looks amazing.
We're very pro-Frighteners here on the pod.
Hell yeah. And we're very pro The Crow. The both of us.
Yeah.
Collectively. I pick up the slack where Kim drops some
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, so
it's
let's talk about your favorite stuff, because this movie, I appreciated watching it with you because you brought such joy to the viewing in your quiet, just like, woo.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's just like tiny little details here and there and everywhere. I love how it looks. You know, like, as much as I will laugh occasionally at some of the lines Brandon Lee delivers and stuff, like, I like it. And it's probably a nostalgia thing. I probably just saw it at the right time. And as much as I know that I'm rating it, eventually, we'll be rating it lower than I would have rated it back when I saw it in the 90s, it has influenced me in ways I'll probably never understand, you know? Like, I love dark alleyways. I love vengeance.
I just emo boys with long hair, apparently.
Right? And I just like weird bad guys. Michael Wincott is
you
such...
You do love a weird bad
he's
guy.
He's such a weird bad guy. I don't understand how he even knows anybody else in this movie. Like, they all look like your standard thugs.
Yeah, and he's a lot cleaner than the rest of them.
And his monologues are great, too. Like, there's a lot of fucking monologues.
How did he meet these guys? He definitely doesn't go to that bar that they frequent.
No, I think he just throws money around.
He shakes a little bell at, like, 3 a.m.
Would y'all like to start some arson?
Anybody that's still out? Yeah, because he's coming from, like, kung fu movies. He's got a
that's what
secret
he looks like,
wall
yeah.
of swords. He's got long-ass hair.
He does spend the finale with a samurai sword on top of a fucking church. Man, that's the other thing. Like, an old abandoned church is the final set piece of the movie, and it looks so killer.
That bird's eye pew shot was my favorite thing of the whole movie.
Yeah, I'm
not even going to describe it for you. You're just going to have to make sense of bird's eye pew shot. What does that mean? I don't know.
This movie also, in terms of, like, the monologues people have and the emo-y stuff came or at a time where I was probably, like, at my most emo. Like, the idea that
see, we emoed at different times, I think.
Maybe, yeah.
Mine is now.
Lines like, it can't rain all the time, like, don't mean anything to me now. But, like, as a teenager, if I saw that written on the back of someone's backpack, I'd be like, oh, I know that pain. Like, I know how much you hurt. Here, have half my cigarette.
Whereas I was like, oh, this movie's too emo, and then at the end I cried, so...
Yeah, that happened. I know, I could hear you rolling your eyes, and then all of a sudden you got, like, hella emotional.
I can't tell myself how to feel, John.
That's just how it goes, you know? Sometimes, you know, it might surprise you when a movie affects you a little bit, but, like,
I just get sad about death and stuff.
Yeah, you know, hey, we're Nightmare on Film Street. We're here to make you feel... we're here to make you feel sad and think about death and stuff. Yeah, no, totally. I get that. But, like, even the... Man, there's stuff in the movie that I don't think works 100%, but I still like. David Patrick Kelly repeating lines from Paradise Lost.
I didn't catch that.
He picks up a... It's like, really creepy initially. He picks up a copy of Paradise Lost.
Is this... Which villain is this?
This is the... This is one of the fire it up guys. You know, he's the one with the car. He's the one who gets duct taped to his car and it fucking
his
blows up.
His death scene was great. And,
love it.
And how he reacted to the crow. I was waiting for somebody to have their whole world be affected.
Get fucking rocked by the
crow.
Yeah,
because so many people were like, you're not supposed to be here. What are you doing here? And he was... His ground was shook.
Right? Yeah, totally. Like, the foundation of his reality was just broken in half by realizing who this guy was.
Mm-hmm.
He's such a good fucking actor, and, like, he always got small parts like this, and he just kills every time. And it's in that scene, too, where he's repeating those lines from Paradise Lost. But, like, the whole idea is, like... it's like the devil looked upon goodness and felt how awful it was. And, like, the whole idea there is it's like you have a character who has sort of fallen from grace. Satan, I think, is actually the person in that line that's actually being talked about. And it's like you're witnessing somebody who is good, and, like, their goodness makes you feel how bad of a person you are. Like, it's in that...
It gives you perspective.
Basically, yeah. Like, it's almost like how he kills Michael Wincott at the end of the movie. Like, he grabs him by the head and just, like, downloads him, like, on all the pain of dying and, like, being in a hospital and feeling surgery and also just, you know, like, rape and murder and just, like, awful shit. And that's what kills Michael Wincott. But it kind of, like, existentially happens to David Patrick Kelly's character, who sort of just, like, realizes all of the awful shit he's ever done. And I don't know. I think it's also too knowing that, like, when he's repeating, like, you're not supposed to come back, you're not supposed to come back, is kind of scary, because I think, like, it's like right before you die, you realize there's a heaven and a hell and you know where you're going. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's very true.
And also to know that you deserve it is the other thing.
Yeah. And it's interesting when you think of that, though, because the Crow, Eric Draven, he brings a lot of ambiguity to something that should be, you know, black or white. Where does he go back to?
So I think there is an ambiguity to that until the end of the movie. You know what I'm saying?
Because like, Shelley's like, hey, I'm a ghost now. Come back to bed, honey.
I think she shows up as an angel, you know? And because, like, he is very much sort of like a demon in the movie. He's a black angel. I don't know. Like, he's just like a messenger of death more than anything. And so, yeah, I think it's unclear about where he's going after all this. I get the impression that he never really went to heaven or hell.
I don't
think
he went anywhere.
No.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so cool about his performance in the beginning of the movie, too, because as far as he knows, he fell out of a fucking window, hit the ground, woke up buried, and then crawled his way out into the moonlight.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
it's so goth.
it's so fucking goth. Yeah. And yeah, at the end of the movie, he's visited by Shelley, who's very clearly an angel, and yeah, takes him to a better place. You know, I think it's pretty cool. It is a movie that I as a kid I watched. It's like when you watch Clueless and you're like, man, I can't wait till I'm an older person.
You can't wait till you're avenging your own death.
Right? I can't wait until until I'm brutally murdered and I get to come back.
I can't wait to wear really tight long sleeve shirts and stand in the rain.
Even watching it now.
Get a cat.
I have that feeling. Like watching him put that shirt on, I'm just like, oh, this is what cool is and this is what I should aspire to be. I do remember as a kid being like, I can't wait till I could buy my own tight fitting black shirts. And then even fucking Tony Todd has finger armor in this movie. Like, yo, even like the not cool people have cooler stuff than
I appreciated the turtleneck most of all.
The turtleneck's cool. I remember wanting finger armor so bad. Like, that was just like, I'm not going to be a complete person until I have cool finger armor. Do you remember that shit?
I was never into finger armor.
Well, like, I never had the money for it either, but like, I always saw it at the, you know, Hot Topic and Spencer's
and
Gifts.
You're like, and I would like a claw.
Yeah.
Can
yeah.
I have an exoskeleton for my inside skeleton?
That's what I wanted. I remember, so I mean, in terms of just like the quick little corner here where we're talking about how young I was when this movie came out, I remember not being allowed to watch it. And I think part of it was around the idea that the lead actor died. Like, that was obviously not part of the marketing campaign, but all anybody was talking about when the movie came out. I remember walking into rooms where, like, my mom was talking with a friend of hers about the movie, and they stopped talking because they didn't want to talk about all the dark goth movie that the kids can't watch.
I think that's probably why this was never on my radar, because I think I was, like, sheltered from it. And obviously, I think my mom, she hid me from a lot of, like, the craft and stuff.
Oh.
I watched a lot of, like, you know, she shouldn't be watching this shit, but anything that was even remotely goth was kept away from me.
That's great. I love that. I don't remember how I saw it. I think I just had to wait. I don't think I, like, you know, snuck in anywhere and watched it.
Mm-hmm.
But there was definitely, like, a...
I watched it at a friend's house over lunch breaks. That's how
that's cool. Like, you watched like 15, 20 minutes of it at a time?
Yeah, like her mom's boyfriend would... You remember back when people would rip movies onto discs? And so she just had this case of discs with like movie titles written on them?
Yeah.
And that's how I watched a lot of movies that came out in like the 90s.
Oh, okay.
Was just like blue pen on a disc and I was like, what is this?
One of those fucking like discs, disc booklets or
yes.
whatever? Yeah. You're just like, wow, you have, like, a problem. Like, you've got 1,000 movies and you haven't watched any of them? Why do you rip them? Like, why do you do this?
There were, like, 1,000. And every time we would go, there would just be more added to the case.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. What an era.
But, yeah, I mean, like, for better or worse, like it or not, yeah, this movie's just kind of in my bones. And as much as I fight it now, it's just kind of like, yeah, it's there. It's a part of me, mm-hmm. in a way. It's definitely not a movie that I would spring to put on like my top 10 or like the movies that made me kind of list, but watching it, I can tell for certain that it definitely had an effect on me when I was younger.
Yeah, I'm trying not to talk about how like sad the movie made me, and but I think that's a testament to the movie's
legacy.
Sure. I don't know. I think it was just very, it's a very poetic film about grief and stuff. And I think the truth behind it makes it even more, it just makes it resonate even more. Like the themes in the movie are only, you know, amplified by the truth behind it. Actually, something I wanted to mention on the podcast, but I don't want to like bring everything down. But now that we're wrapping up, this definitely factors into my rating so I can get it out.
Okay.
So the guy who wrote the comic book.
James O'Barr or Jeff O'Barr.
Yeah, James O'Barr. He wrote The Crow after his fiance was killed by a drunk driver. And, and for him, he was using it as like a process. So like, you know, like creating art or purging it, getting revenge through the comic book. He thought it would be therapeutic, but he said it was not.
Yeah.
That it became this thing that he visited every day. And so it was just like he was constantly actively grieving.
Yeah.
And I just think that's so fitting for something about a character that's like literally getting revenge on the page, something that the character can't let go. That's why I said Stranger Than Fiction, because a screenwriter couldn't have written anything as poetic as this.
Yeah, and exactly.
I'm getting emotional just thinking about the ending of the movie.
And now you're faced with the hard part every critic came up against in 1994. Kim, how do you rate The Crow without saying, yeah, this movie made me cry and probably deserves 100% for all the reasons that it almost didn't exist? But what I mean, like, honestly, as a movie, how do you rate The Crow?
Well, so I think it's plot light. Like, I said that. Like, I just you know, I'm not a big superhero person, so like getting revenge on bad guys is normally not my bag, but I think it's a really successful film about grief, and 3 out of 4.
I'm also giving it a 3 out of 4.
I don't love to be sad, but I you know what I mean?
No one does.
I hate this, but also I'm thinking profoundly about the universe.
Yeah, no, I'm also a 3 out of 4 because I think it's a lot of fun. I don't think it's a perfect movie, but whatever. Yeah, and yeah, if you had asked 14-year-old me, it's a 4 out of 4, and 14-year-old me would also punch 32-year-old me in the face for giving it a 3 out of 4. Like, how dare you? You sold out on your own emotions.
Yeah, I hope the next film isn't so actually emo. You know, we were going to do an emo pairing. I didn't think that we were going to get emo.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I didn't really expect that to happen.
I was like,
ugh,
all of these emo people.
I'll tell you right now, though, I know for a fact that the movie we will be talking about next is not nearly as emo, but if you don't like undead boys coming back for vengeance, like almost like a goth superhero, I think you might have a little bit of a hard time with this one. And I am so excited to hear your thoughts on it.
I've never seen it.
But it features some of the coolest fucking creature work from the late 90s.
It is superhero-y, though, so more of that.
Either way, 3 out of 4 from the both of us for The Crow, but that's just our opinion. Let us know what you thought of The Crow, you know, how it's affected you, whether or not it's a movie that has sort of defined a specific period in your life and you continue to revisit it when you need a good cry. Hit us up on Twitter at NOFS Podcast or in the Nightmare on Film Street Discord at NOFSpodcast.com/Discord.
I'm never going to make fun of a movie for being emo ever again.
That's gonna be it for us this week. If you'd like more Nightmare on Film Street, we've got, you know, like 250 episodes in the back catalog, and we've got a shit ton of bonus episodes available to you at nofspodcast.com/fiendclub. This is, you know, Nightmare on Film Street is a free podcast. We don't have credits at the end of it because Kim and I just do everything, but it's made possible by the members of the Fiend Club. So head on over there to support the show and get yourself some bonus episodes in the meantime. Until next week, I'm John.
I'm Kim.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.